I'll call us to order. The Legislative Budget Office, Legislative Budget Office Oversight Commission. It's always been a tongue tire. I don't want to say that after session some night at midnight. So, welcome to everybody. We've got a few new members. I'll start over here on my right, and we'll just go around and do some introductions. Maybe we should start down at the end of the table.
Jim Nobles, Legislative Auditor.
Eric Nauman, Senate Fiscal Staff.
Melissa Wicklund, State Senate.
Julie Rosen, State Senate.
Mary Kiffmeyer, State Senate.
Bob Vogel, State Representative.
And I'm Michelle Weber, Director of the Legislative Budget Office.
Lyndon Carlson, State Representative.
Jerry Hertaus, State Rep.
Bill Marks, House Fiscal Staff.
And Britta Raton, State Budget Director with MMB.
Well, thank you for all being here, and thank you for setting up the meeting. I know it's not easy to be able to set these things up during sessions, but necessary to get together and do our business. First order of business would be, since we have a quorum, would be to officially approve the previous meeting minutes. The first one would be to approve the minutes of October 30th.
So moved.
Senator Kiffmeyer moves to approve the minutes of October 30th. Any discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. The next is to approve the minutes from December 19th.
So moved.
Representative Carlson moves. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. Next order of business is to elect the chair of the Legislative Budget Office Oversight Commission for 2019-20.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
I'd like to nominate Senator Mary Kiffmeyer as chair.
Any other nominations? Any other nominations? Any other?
Chairman,
Representative.
People are aware of the tradition of commissions. Chair is rotated between the bodies, so it obviously would be a senator this time, and then the vice chair would be from the House this time. And then they have to be of opposite political parties.
Okay. With that comment, Senator Rosen has moved to elect Senator Kiffmeyer to serve as chair of the Legislative Budget Office Oversight Commission. Further discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I think I can turn this over to I think I can turn this over to you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, past chair.
Yes. The
best title in the world often is. Yes, thank you so much. Appreciate your work.
It's been a pleasure.
Good. Well,
and we were fortunate to have gotten good staff and get a good start here.
Absolutely. That is tremendously important. Absolutely realize that. And to everybody and all the work that is, and of course, every year has its own tasks in front of you. So thank you very much. I appreciate that. Would you like to, it flips to the House. Would you like to nominate somebody from the House then? To be the vice chair.
Yes. So this.
Ms. Representative Carlson happens to be here, and I think he would be easily to ask if he's willing to do so.
Certainly.
Mr. Chairman, I was thinking of Representative Knorr, but he's not here to find out if he would be willing to accept it or not. So, but it would be of opposite political party would be the tradition. So I'd be willing to take it with that understanding, and perhaps if Representative Knorr is truly interested, we can revisit the issue at a future meeting, but I'd certainly be willing to do it today.
In that case, I will move to elect Representative Carlson to serve as vice chair.
Nominate.
It's okay.
I would nominate, yes. I made it this far without messing anything up.
Okay, good grief. That's right. Got to do it. I got to put it on the right side, then I get it. Thank you very much. So we have a nomination for Representative Lyndon Carlson for Vice Chair of the LBO. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Congratulations, Representative Carlson. I look forward to working with you. With that, members, proceeding on to the rest of our business at this time, Representative Vogel, you look like you're, do you want anything else or anything to... Okay, no, I'm not suggesting. I just saw
I usually don't get into long, rambling speeches.
Uh-huh.
But I did forget to thank the staff and the people that have helped us get here. It's been an interesting journey since July, actually, since we had the task force, and people have been extremely helpful, and especially as we embark on a new endeavor. So my thanks to all of the people that got this thing to where we are today. So.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. Okay, with that, members, we're on to the Legislative Budget Office update.
And Madam Chair.
And our Executive Director, yes?
Would you like me to set up a testifying table or stay here?
You know, I think it's just so far away, and I don't feel like we're really all that much. Why don't
I could maybe move to the end of this.
Or maybe
so
sit up a little bit further. The big thing is that everybody can see you and...
So, members, the second packet of information that's in your folders is a PowerPoint presentation with two slides per page, and that's the document that I'll be using to provide an update to you on the work and status of the Legislative Budget Office. I'm going to give you a quick update on staffing for the office, what our orientation and training plan is for the analysts in the office, talk with you about some risks that have been identified and mitigation strategies to address those risks, and then finally talk with you about a funding request that will go before the Legislative Coordinating Commission. On the bottom of page one for the staffing, for context, the current budget within the Legislative Budget Office supports 7 staff. That's a director, a coordinator, and 5 analysts within the office. There has been significant interest in working with the Legislative Budget Office. I'm pleased to share that with all of you. We posted for the analyst positions earlier this year, and we had an overwhelming amount of interest in applicants, and they were a very high-quality applicant pool. There were 21 individuals that were invited in for a first-round interview. Of those 21, 12 individuals were invited back for a second-round interview. In the second round, there was an exercise that was performed by the candidates. They received a fiscal note and had to provide a presentation to a mock legislative committee that included myself, a representative from the House Fiscal Staff, Senate Fiscal Staff, and MMB, and the Legislative Coordinating Commission. So we had a partnership in the hiring panel as well. The 5 positions, the 5 analyst positions have been filled. The first analyst started on Monday of this week. We have one starting on Thursday of this week. 2 will be beginning next Monday, and then the final analyst will begin on April 1st. So they'll all be starting here in the next couple of weeks. Collectively, they bring a variety of experience from state and local government. Some have had experience working with the legislature, nonprofits, institutions of higher education. Their educational backgrounds represent public policy, law, and political science. So I'm really excited about the diversity of experience and perspective that is being brought to the office. The coordinator position, Lola, who is sitting in the audience, unfortunately, she started in January, but will be leaving to take a new opportunity in the private sector. So the coordinator position has been reposted, and we're hoping to be interviewing for that in the next couple of weeks to fill that position.
Could we just have her stand and be recognized?
Sure.
Thank you very much for being with us, even for a short time.
Yeah.
We wish you well.
So in terms of training the staff, we worked hard to get the staff on board
to try and have them have some exposure during this legislative session, recognizing that some of the changes that were enacted in 2018 provided a great opportunity for this transition year, for the staff to be able to observe and work in partnership with MMB executive budget officers and fiscal analysts through the remainder of this legislative session. But we also recognize that it probably couldn't be a worse time to ask more of those individuals. So Mr. Marks, Mr. Nauman, and Ms. Raytan and I have all met, and we've agreed to a coordinated approach to training the staff. That coordinated approach includes some training directly from MMB, as well as training that I'll provide to the team collectively based on the knowledge and experience that I have. And then they'll be doing, they'll be developing relationships with fiscal analysts. We'll be flagging fiscal notes that it would be helpful to do a case study on over the summer months when there is more availability to really dig into what might have happened with a particular fiscal note or what additional analysis might be helpful if there was more time to respond to a fiscal note. And so those are some of the things that we've already started to do. On an individual level, they'll be attending finance committee hearings, so they'll be able to observe and see the interaction, how fiscal notes are presented, the discussion that happens around fiscal notes. They'll also be monitoring bill introductions and reviewing fiscal notes that are completed and identifying questions that they have that they can then reach out to the executive budget officers and the fiscal analysts to talk through. So those are some of the things that we've agreed to in terms of the training approach for the staff. Moving on to page two, risks. I've identified three risks to the successful transition to the LBO. The first being the current status of bills having been introduced that propose to repeal the office. That creates some uncertainty for the office, but as I've worked on the hiring, I've been really transparent with the individuals who applied for positions about those bills, and individuals have been still really interested in coming to work for the LBO and kind of recognize the uncertainty of the legislative process and that things might look different than they look today. I'm focusing very much on current law and making sure that we're prepared as an office to take on the responsibilities on September 1st. In the event something were to change with respect to the makeup of the office or if the office were to be repealed, I'm hopeful that the uniform standards that I'll talk with you about next can be used as a way to inform and improve the fiscal note process in the future. The other risk that I've identified is related to the time. With it being the end of March and the individuals taking on this responsibility on September 1st, it's a limited amount of time for the analysts to develop the expertise in the policy areas that they'll be working with. And that's part of what was taken into consideration in developing the training plan. And then finally, a major risk that I've identified and I've talked with you about at a previous meeting is the level of staffing for the office and the sheer quantity of fiscal notes and the complexity of fiscal notes. I'm concerned that the current staffing levels might compromise the timeliness of information being provided to the legislature. And so with that, I am pursuing a request to the Legislative Coordinating Commission for funding for additional resources for the office. The charts that are on page three are just an effort to convey some data around what does the current capacity to manage fiscal notes look like with the individuals that are available at Minnesota Management and Budget under the current staffing plan and budget for the Legislative Budget Office, and then also what would it look like with the proposed budget that I'll be requesting of the LCC. So the blue bar reflects the average number, and this is very simplistic math. What this does is it looks at the last four legislative sessions, what were the total number of fiscal notes that were completed or incomplete at the end of those sessions, and then just divides the number of analysts that are available to manage those fiscal notes. So the blue bar represents MMB over the last 4 years. And the orange or red bar, orange, depending on the color. So the orange bar represents the current number of analysts that would be available under the current funding resources for the LBO. And so what that does is it reflects that on an individual level, those staff during a budget year in particular would have a high volume of fiscal notes that they'd be needing to manage and analyze and provide to the legislature. The gray bar then reflects what it would look like under the proposed staffing level that I'm asking for. The bottom chart is just a depiction of the number of individuals. Some of the conversation that gets a little complicated when it comes to the staffing levels are when you look at a full-time equivalent versus a number of people that are available to support the fiscal note process. So the number of individuals that are currently available, as represented by the blue bar for MMB, are up to 17 people that can pitch in when necessary, that can have some sort of role with respect to fiscal notes. The orange bar in the first chart shows you that there would be 7 people in the LBO under the current staffing plan, and what I'm requesting is that we would increase the staffing for the LBO to 12 individuals. That provides a more manageable workflow. It helps to address the large volume of fiscal notes that come in during the legislative session, and it also would allow for policy areas that are reasonable for an analyst to have the expertise in. So, for example, with the current staffing level, Maren Bardal, who's here in the audience, who started on Monday, she currently will be responsible for courts, corrections, public safety, and transportation. That's a very large portfolio to have a sufficient level of expertise in and to be able to manage that volume of fiscal notes that are coming in. And so I'm proposing to add an additional 5 staff to the LBO. The bars on the far right are just for perspective. It's the House and Senate fiscal analysts, so just so that you know the number of fiscal analysts that
just
are
just a moment, Ms. Weber. Did you have a question?
I want to make a comment because it is footnoted here, but I just want to make sure that it's laid out clearly. So the bars comparing to the staffing levels at MMB, I just want to be clear that the folks that are working on fiscal notes at MMB, our executive budget officers, have quite a bit more work within their portfolio than just fiscal note review. And so during this legislative session time, they're also putting together our forecast, and they are putting together the governor's budget proposal and working with agencies on that, as well as handling accounting matters with our accounting side and other budgetary issues that come up on a day-to-day basis. So they do have, I just want to make sure folks understand that it's not an apples-to-apples comparison.
Ms. Whitehan, I also understand from another time when you commented on this, though, that they also have other staff within MMB who support them as well, correct?
Sure. There are 12 budget officers, and they have supervisors that we call team leaders, and so those 3 team leaders can step in and help resolve fiscal note issues where is needed.
Okay, thank you.
And that's part when you look at the comparison. I'm not requesting the same level of staffing in acknowledgement that the MMB executive budget officers have a broader portfolio than just fiscal notes. So I'm trying to balance a reasonable number of staff with a focus on fiscal notes. On page 4, the top slide represents the current budget for the Legislative Budget Office. And the reason that I wanted to share this is when we look at the next slide, the funding request that's being made, there's a significant amount of carry forward that I'm anticipating having from fiscal year 19 that makes the funding requests a lesser amount in fiscal year 20 in anticipation of using that carry forward. The reason that the full appropriation for fiscal year 19 will not be fully expended within that time period is the timing of hiring staff, and also there was a small allocation for leasing space, and we've been able to temporarily locate the office on a temporary basis in the basement of the state office building at no charge. So there's some savings there. The fiscal year 19 appropriation for the Legislative Budget Office is $864,000, which is a little bit higher than the ongoing base appropriation for the office. In fiscal year 20, it goes down to $818,000, and that higher amount in fiscal year 19 was in recognition of equipment startup, office configuration as the office got underway. The bottom slide then, I'll call your attention to the yellow highlighted row. The funding request that I'm planning to pursue with the LCC then will request $86,000 in fiscal year 20. I'm not proposing to delay hiring the staff if we're successful in obtaining additional funds for the office, but we would utilize some of that carry forward for fiscal year 19 to support those costs. And then beginning in fiscal year 21, it would be $666,000 of additional resources that would be requested. It will support that funding amount supports adding 5 additional staff, and it also would support leasing space at the 525 Park building so that the office is located in a more neutral location. And with that, members, I'll stand for questions.
All right, no questions then. I think we can move on to the next item on the agenda.
Madam Chair, I would just
Representative
make
Carlson,
a comment
sorry.
On the number of fiscal notes and the averaging there. What came to my mind is not all fiscal notes are equal in terms of the time that one puts in.
Yep, Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, that's correct. And also, by doing just simple math for the average, some of what you miss in the story that's before you are things like the Health and Human Services Committees, where there may be across both the House and Senate 400 fiscal notes in any one year. So that's also not here. This was very simple math that just looked at the total number of fiscal notes divided by the number of people.
Representative Carlson, your point is well taken. I understand that. I think it's the uncertainty, and we want to be sure that in the first year of operations of the Legislative Budget Office, that we are able to fulfill the needs of the legislature. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Weber, just to be clear, FY20, the salary and benefits is 1.186, and that's for the full 12 analysts that you'd like to be up to. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, that's correct.
Thank you.
All right. Anybody else? Okay. All right. Then the next item on the agenda will be the uniform standards and procedures. So, Ms. Weber, again.
Madam Chair and members, the third document then that's in your packet, it's titled Uniform Standards and Procedures. And this outlines both the requirement to develop uniform standards and procedures and the process that we'd like to pursue for the development of them on the first page. These standards must be developed by September 1st of this year. They are required to be approved by the Oversight Commission and then posted on the Legislative Budget Office website as well as available on the State Register. I would like to engage stakeholders in providing input into what do the standards and procedures look like. Those stakeholders would include legislative staff, legislators, MMB, agency staff involved in fiscal notes, as well as individuals from the public who may have an interest. The initial development of the standards I would like to bring before this commission in either June or July for discussion and consideration, and then bring the final standards back in August of this year for final action by the commission, final approval by the commission. The second and third page identify 14 different topics that have been a result of various conversations that I've had with members of the Oversight Commission, legislative staff, chief financial officers, that are things where there's an opportunity to either improve the fiscal note process or with the creation of an LBO to create something new. The foundation, I'm not proposing that the fiscal note process would be significantly different in terms of fiscal analysts making requests for fiscal notes, agencies providing the data associated with it, and the LBO reviewing and analyzing that information prior to submission to the legislature. But I think there are certain things that where the uniform standards can not just adopt the current policies and procedures that have been developed by MMB, but they can build from them. They could modify, it might be that they modify them or add additional standards on beyond what the current policies and procedures have. These topic areas are just in alphabetical order, so they're not in order of complexity. One of the directives in the statute is to focus on timeliness. And so that will be a focus of the development of the standards. Each of the questions under the topics would be used as a forum for getting feedback from individuals who are involved in the process. So members, do you have
any members, you're able to give some of your thoughts right now to any one of these 12. And you've noticed there's several bullet points listed under each one. One of them is, are there changes that should be considered to the current fiscal note tracking system, the access policy? So open to input.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Weber, could you please go through number three again, the authorization to request fiscal notes, how it currently works, and what are you proposing?
Sure. Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, so the current process is that the ability to request a fiscal note as outlined in the statute is the chair of the Ways and Means or Finance Committee or the chair of the Standing Committee from which a fiscal note has been referred to. It's my understanding that operationally this has been, the fiscal analysts in both bodies have been empowered to request fiscal notes on behalf of those members. And I'm looking at Mr. Nauman and Mr. Marks to see if they want to add any additional clarification.
And Ms. Raton, also, you deal with this on a regular basis. So that sort of approach. What happens after you deal with Ways and Means, Finance, chairs of budget committees, I'm kind of assuming for the most part? What's the sequence that MMB uses right now after that? What's the thinking or the process?
Madam Chair, I want to make sure I'm understanding your question. Are you asking what is our procedure once we receive a request?
Nope. I think I was more how do requests come to you? So like I mentioned, the chair of Ways and Means can make a request, finance chair, budget chairs, finance committee chairs can make those requests. Is there any other way that fiscal notes get requested to MMB?
Madam Chair, under the current system, typically requests come from fiscal staff.
From fiscal staff.
Madam Chair,
yes.
It might be helpful. Ms. Weber identified this appropriately. The statute does give the authority to request a fiscal note to the Ways and Means Chair in the House, the Finance Chair in the Senate, or the chair of any standing committee to which a bill has been referred. We typically, Mr. Marks and myself, have a conversation with the chair shortly after the election, whoever the chair, when the chair is named, Finance Chair or Ways and Means Chair, and have a conversation about how to operationalize that. As a practical matter, we don't expect that the Ways and Means Chair and the Finance Chair are going to sit down at the computer and request fiscal notes. So we typically have, for many, many years, have operationalized that as allowing fiscal staff to have the authority to essentially request fiscal notes in the name of the Finance Chair or the Ways and Means Chair. And so we sit down at the computer system, we call it the FNTS, and you know, when a fiscal note's required, we, as fiscal staff, make that request. It then is electronically conveyed to MMB, and that's the point where I should turn it over to Ms. Raton, and she can speak about what happens next.
Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Raton, of course, can verify that or add to it, but I guess I am interested in, Ms. Weber, are you proposing a change in that methodology?
Ms. Weber.
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, I'm not proposing a change, but some of the things that I understand that fiscal analysts sometimes get posed with are questions from other members as to whether or not a fiscal note has been requested. Someone other than a chair may ask a question about whether or not a fiscal note has been requested. And so it seemed like it was something that maybe we should talk about. We should either confirm and validate that the current process is what we absolutely want to stay with, and then that provides some consistent response for fiscal staff to have when they're posed with questions like that.
Thank you, Ms. Weber, but I think that was what I'm trying to get at, is trying to go down there, but start from something fixed that we know and then proceed on down. Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and members, and there is another situation with fiscal notes that creates a bit of a contradiction in the law, and that's the 2012 amendment that created the confidential fiscal notes. And so we are also requesting those essentially under the authority of the Ways and Means Chair or the Finance Chair. But these are fiscal notes when a member comes to us and says, I've got this language, I'd like to get it fiscal noted, and I want it to be confidential. The law provides for that. So if Representative Carlson were to come to me and say, what fiscal notes have you requested? That's one I probably shouldn't be disclosing to him. So we're doing that. There's a bit of a contradiction in the law that we're doing those kind of requests too under this general authority. And so that might be something that perhaps the law ought to be amended or changed in those particular circumstances anyway. It's been working. We haven't had issues with it, but it's a little bit of an unusual circumstance.
Yes, without a doubt. Ms. Raton, did you have?
Madam Chair and Mr. Marks, I just want to clarify, that's on unintroduced language only,
correct,
right? Okay, yeah.
Yes.
So and that kind of
confidential,
makes
so it's not on, yep.
So, Ms. Raton, when you mean that, it hasn't been introduced as a bill, so it does
that's
not
right.
have a bill number.
Right.
It's a reviser's number that is tracked through the reviser system. Mr. Marks?
Madam Chair, it may not even be it might just be an amendment that's drafted by House Research or Senate Counsel. It may not be in the reviser system.
Okay.
We just need language, and we've argued we needed printed language to do this with. But.
Okay. So beyond that, though, I think the question that I have is beyond the chairs of Finance and Ways and Means. What other, is there any and other than the confidential kind of language, is there any other way that requests come to you for fiscal note, Ms. Raton?
Madam Chair, there is not. It all comes through the fiscal staff on behalf of the legislature.
Okay. So would I gather here, this would be for maybe Mr. Marks or Mr. Nauman, that this might be more of a legislative issue for us to discuss, and this is kind of a new area for us to say, kind of like the word is operationalize. What does that then mean? But I'm not so looking to change it at all right now. I just think we get to ask the question this time a little bit differently, but I'm not necessarily looking for a change necessarily either. Mr. Nauman.
So, Madam Chair, I'm just wanting to make sure there was a question there to me. I didn't actually hear a question, but I think that maybe there's a conversation for the commission to have. If the description that I gave about how we operationalize the process in Chapter 3 is acceptable to the commission. I mean, I think for the workload management, it makes good and appropriate sense in my view, but it's open for the discussion with the commission to have fiscal staff manage the requests of fiscal notes. Now there is one other additional permutation that I'll add to this, and that is the committee administrator for both the Finance Committee and the Senate and the committee administrator of the Ways and Means Committee in the House also have access to what we call the fiscal note system, the FNTS. And maybe that's an acronym the commission should get comfortable with. So when we talk about the FNTS, you know what we're talking about. That's the electronic system. They both have access to the fiscal note system. And I can say that in the Senate, the typical pattern is not for the committee administrator to make requests of fiscal notes, But I know the current incumbent uses it to at least view the fiscal notes that have been requested. And he can see any of those public fiscal notes that have been requested on introduced language. But in the circumstance where a fiscal analyst has requested a confidential fiscal note, he and, frankly, I can't see anyone else's request if it's confidential.
So I see that. So, Ms. Weber, in regards to the bar graph that you did, those were actual fiscal note requests, were they? Or were they just bills?
Madam Chair, they were fiscal note requests. They weren't reflective of all bills that were introduced during those time periods.
All right.
They were just bills for which a fiscal note was requested.
And I do know from chairing a budget committee that we will have a fiscal note request that cannot, it probably takes more time to communicate the request than it does to answer the question sometimes. So back to your point, Representative Carlson, not all are equal, and that's absolutely true. I would say that unless, does anybody have any more comments on it? We can have a longer discussion about this, but I just want to be sure we maybe get through some of the other issues before Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, while we're in the process, I have a question of MNB and Ms. Weber. How would you currently, in the case of MNB, prioritize requests for fiscal notes?
That's a good question.
And what would be Ms. Weber's recommendation? And the reason I ask that question when we get to the busy period of the session is kind of like not all fiscal notes are equal and the need isn't always equal. Mm-hmm. If you have a bill up before Senate Finance or Ways and Means, the last stop before you hit the House floor, you're going to need that fiscal note. And sometimes amendments are proposed, and in the House, at least, we have a 24-hour rule relative to fiscal or relative to amendments. And sometimes an amendment is just as important as the original bill relative to a fiscal note. So my question is, how would either of you prioritize how you move forward on making sure that the information is there when it's needed?
I think that's a real critical question, Representative Carlson. Ms. Raton, how do you do it now? How do you prioritize?
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, we advise all of our budget officers to be in very close contact with their fiscal staff, to be talking about the schedule for the upcoming week, to talk about what's coming 2 weeks out so they can be working with their agencies to prioritize their work. We also advise budget officers to be talking to fiscal staff about whether there is an amendment coming that will significantly change the content of the bill, because one thing we sometimes lose time in the fiscal note process as agencies put in a lot of work on a fiscal note on a bill that ends up being dramatically different once it actually gets heard in committee because an amendment gets added. So we try to advise them to be working with fiscal staff to make sure that we are working in the smartest way possible on the fiscal notes, and we're prioritizing those that are coming up for hearings.
Thank you. Representative Carlson, did you?
Well, I was interested in what Ms. Weber would
comment
on that, if it would be a different approach or not.
And if you're ready to, Ms. Weber.
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, one of the things that I have heard is that it's a very difficult position for a fiscal analyst to be put in when they get a call from either an agency or an executive budget officer to say to specifically identify which notes are the priority. Because sometimes that could be placing them in a position of assigning more value to certain bills from certain authors. And so I think leveraging the transparency around when are bills being scheduled for committee meetings, and if we can allow as much notice as possible for when bills are going to be heard in committee, that could be a very logical way under which fiscal notes are prioritized, and it doesn't put anybody in a position of valuing one fiscal note higher than another.
There's always going to be, I expect, some judgment. This is why we have staff such as you there, that you're going to have to do that no matter what. But I would say that budget bills are probably a first priority, and that come out of a budgeting committee. Representative Carlson, Senator Rosen, do you have?
Okay. Madam Chair, might I bring up one other
Mr. Nobles, yes.
Issue in terms of process that's on the list here? And it really has to do with where does this leave MMB in the process, does MMB plan on just backing away and turning this over? Do you plan on being still engaged? Are you going to be still interceding in this process? I mean, you're sort of between the LBO and the agency still. You're still in charge of all the financial affairs of the state. So what is going to be the role of the executive budget officers, the commissioner, you? Are you going to have your own number on a bill that might be different than what the LBO comes with? Are you just going to leave it up to them to come up with the number and work with the agencies? What's going to be your role?
Ms. Raton, that's the million-dollar question, maybe.
Madam Chair, Mr. Nobles, thank you for the question. At this point, we are advising EBOs, our executive budget officers, that they will still be reviewing every fiscal note. I've talked to Ms. Weber. I believe EBOs will still have access to the fiscal notes at the same time that fiscal staff do now, which is when they're in preliminary status. So they can review the note once an agency has signed off, and the executive budget officer can be involved in that conversation about whether the assumptions make sense, whether the costs look reasonable. So I think EBOs are going to continue to play a similar role, but they won't have final sign-off on the fiscal note. That will be with the LBO.
I could just ask a follow-up.
Mr. Nobles,
Do you envision then some mechanism of communication where, I mean, you're not going to sign off on the fiscal note, but if there is a difference, a concern, a conflict at MMB over the assumptions that the LBO has accepted, do you envision a mechanism of communicating that? And what would that be?
Ms. Raton.
Madam Chair and Mr. Nobles, we haven't fully wrestled with that question yet. I'm hoping that we can continue to work collaboratively with the LBO, and if we have concerns about assumptions or calculations costs within a fiscal note, we can work collaboratively to work that out. I would really like to avoid having dueling estimates from MMB and the LBO. And I'm confident in terms of the way we work currently with fiscal staff on a collaborative basis that we can engage in that way.
Yeah, Mr. Nobles, I think that is a really important question. We don't want to have, you know, the shadow notes, and like you mentioned, the dueling one, there needs to be, and the LBO needs to also be recognized at that point as the sign-off. But we get input from the agencies, and MMB is one of the agencies that has some expertise, so I think those kinds of things.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Weber.
Could I just add, I want to remind the commission that the current agreement that the commission approved between the Legislative Budget Office and MMB would provide MMB executive budget officers the same access that would be provided to the LBO this year. So we are able to view the information agencies are providing, and I think that MMB will be an important resource, particularly in the quality of fiscal notes and in those cases where the LBO is pushing back on an agency or has questions of an agency, we can also utilize the executive budget officers at MMB to help us in terms of influencing the agencies and making sure the agencies are complying with the uniform standards and procedures.
Okay, should we move on to another area at all? Are you ready? Senator Cohen, welcome.
So, Madam Chair, with apologies, I had a room in the SOB, and so I was kind of wandering and following all of Representative Carlson's division meetings, so I apologize. So I think I've caught the drift of this, so let me ask Madam Chair and Ms. Raton. So what happens? So I walked in to talk about doing this in a collaborative way and so on. So what happens if, hypothetically, an EBO comes to yourself or to the commissioner and says, okay, we have this fiscal note from the LBO, and this is just totally off base by $50 million. What happens then? Do you come to us? Do you go to Ms. Weber and her staff and say, can we reconcile this? So my question is, there's no reconciliation. We do have dueling fiscal notes. What happens then? What is the obligation on the part of the agency?
Mr. Raton, would you want to comment to that? Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, in that situation, the first thing I would do is engage with Ms. Weber, and I would loop in Mr. Nauman and Mr. Marks. And I think the four of us have been working well together, and we have many years working with Mr. Nauman and Mr. Marks collaboratively and in kind of hashing through some of these questions. So first, I would hope that that would be a successful conversation. If it's not, I do think if there is something that MMB feels like is being misrepresented, we would need to flag that concern. How the form and format of that, I'm not sure what that would be.
Senator Cohen.
So Madam Chair, thanks for the response. That was a very good political response. I appreciate that. but what happens, so understand that you work well, obviously, with Ms. Weber, certainly with Mr. Marks, Mr. Nauman, and that's always been my experience over the years, that the folks at a nonpartisan professional level have done quite well. But what happens with my hypothetical, where there's just something that's irreconcilable, where you can't resolve it in this amicable way with whoever?
I have a response to that as well, but Representative Hertas, I'll let you go first.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm proud to serve on this committee this year. It was my understanding that one of the reasons or the functions to establish this LBO was to make it apolitical and to be independent from any political influence. And as I've been listening here, I think Mr. Nobles raises a good question. I heard the lady here from MMB say that we would have final sign-off. That concerns me, if I heard that correctly.
Ms. Raitan, you want to just clear that up?
Representative, I'm sorry. Who would have final sign-off?
I thought I correctly heard you say that with regard to the process, if there was a disagreement, that MMB would have final sign-off.
I apologize. That's not what I said. I said the LBO is, once the LBO is established, they have sign-off on notes.
Okay. Thank you for that correction.
So Madam Chair, can I continue my question?
Just a moment before you go there. Yep. Ask another question. I just want to say the statute is clear. The responsibility is to the LBO, just like it was before with MMB. And by the way, sometimes the legislature disagreed with the fiscal note. That is not going to change, like somehow magically we're going to not have that. We are. And so let's be realistic about it. But in the end, in this situation, the statute is clear that the final sign-off transfers from MMB over to the LBO. And then there is this working together. If there's a major kind of thing, I think the first thing to do is go to the assumptions, because most often I have found it is the interpretation of the assumptions, and has the author written the language on the face of it clear enough, is most of the time I've found that it's in those assumptions. Because after that, it tends to be a little bit more math, but it is in those assumptions. And one of the things that I had brought up to Ms. Weber and have brought up before is that too often we get those assumptions back to the chief author at the end of the process with the preliminary, instead of dealing with those assumptions more upfront, so that the author can say, oh, whoa, I've been through that situation where I've had fiscal notes and I saw the assumptions and I'm like, well, that's not what I meant. And so I think that is a really important piece of this, but I think as far as the authority, the collaborative working together, but if we think now there's going to be absolute agreement, there wasn't before, and I don't think we should say so now, and we will work that through. And that's what the legislative process is for, to work that through. And then you have a governor as well who engages, and we work that all through. But my biggest concern is to make sure that some of those assumptions don't stay too long.
So, Madam
Chair, Senator Cohen, back to you now.
Yeah, if I can continue my question to Ms. Raitan, because we have a lot of thoughts, assumptions, which I'm not disagreeing with in terms of the establishment of this office and procedures. Madam Chair, Ms. Raitan, my question is a little bit different. If there's a hypothetical, and I assume it'll be a rare hypothetical, where there is a significant disagreement between the agency and the Legislative Budget Office and or the Chief Fiscal Analyst for the House and the Senate, and not in a partisan way, not a partisan argument, that the DFL governor disagrees with Republican House or Republican Senate, nothing of that sort. I'm suggesting that there is some type of difference determined on the part of your staff, MMB staff, maybe in consultation with an agency, and there's and it's not reconciled, and it in your view is significant. Again, this is hypothetical, and this is not you're doing this, in an agency that is under the jurisdiction of a DFL governor. What do you think you would do under that circumstance?
Well, Ms. Raton.
Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, I think in that circumstance it would be handled the way it's been handled previously, but in the reverse. I mean, you're correct, Madam Chair, that there are times when the legislature has objected to what's in a fiscal note, and there might have been a letter sent or discussions that were sparked as a result of that. I have a hard time imagining a situation that through those discussions with nonpartisan staff at a staff level that we couldn't come to a resolution.
And Madam Chair, I recognize I'm presenting what
Senator
I think.
Senator Cohen.
Hopefully it's a far-fetched hypothetical, mm-hmm. but I just wanted to find out from the agency's perspective what might happen with my far-fetched hypothetical.
Well, Senator Cohen, in some ways it's not because we have disagreements now. The question is the depth or the height or the width of the disagreement. But I like what Ms. Raton said. One of the things that I think it would be very helpful, if you're kind of at that situation, to put it in a letter, document what it is, the process, the material facts that would be necessary. And first of all, I would really like to see it worked out through our nonpartisan staff, through Mr. Nauman, so on and so forth, Mr. Marks, so that we do that. But if you're in that situation, I think the appropriate way is a letter that can include the governor, can include the chairs of committees, so on and so forth. That is currently one of our best ways of communicating in that kind of situation.
Chair.
I think we would want to maybe put something like that in a process, procedures, or something like that. Since it's been brought up here, I think, Ms. Weber, you might work with Ms. Raton and talk about that and maybe bring something for us.
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Cohen, on page 2 of the Uniform Standards, number 7, around dispute resolution, and then you'll see item B, what informal and formal steps will be taken. So my intention is to bring before the commission a very specific both informal steps that will be taken, formal steps that will be taken, and then recognize that we can't plan for every circumstance. But my hope is that at least we will all collectively understand when someone has a dispute, what is the process then that we're going to try to employ when we find a dispute with the information and numbers.
I see that Ms. Weber has, as a good executive director would do, has gone ahead and thought of that, and it's down on number 6. So we'll look forward to some of that language. What else would you like, or members, you want to give input on? I mean, there's 12 areas here. Is there somebody that has one that would like to go for further discussion? Or would you rather maybe see Ms. Weber flesh this out a little bit more so that we can see a little more detail and start working through that? Which means you could have a number 13, you could have 10. You're just putting your best thoughts here for us, and we really appreciate that very much. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, as I look at it, I like the content that's here. One thing as we get into a discussion on fiscal notes is my sense is they're never going to come true. I've never done a projection yet that has come true. It generally hopefully is in the ballpark or it leads me in the right direction, but you know, that's why we do it as an exercise to try to get to an end. But we also realize when we put these things together that they're most likely not going to come true exactly. So you know, I applaud the effort to go through and put all of these things here and that they're spending the time because what we need is a good process to follow. And there's going to be no assurance that as we get into discussions. And to me, the discussions will be healthy. I think that constructive criticism is the best thing that we can have when we do these things, because there's different perspectives that have to be input and used to get to the hopefully the clearest answer. So I do think taking the time individually for these and maybe commenting back to you if we do have some suggestions or whatever, because this is one of the most important things that we will do because we're putting in place that structure. So now I don't see anything specific, but I do think that this is the key right here. Thank you.
Well, it seems as though that it's Representative Carlson.
Yes, I've been hard to see here in the corner, but I wanted to go to the timeliness and point C. Should fiscal notes be requested without a hearing scheduled for the proposed bill? I'm giving some thought to that, and there are times, like I mentioned earlier, in terms of how fiscal notes are prioritized, certain committees, for example, Ways and Means, is the last step before the House floor. And you may want the fiscal note before you schedule a bill so you have some idea of what the budget impact is going to be. Mm-hmm. So a bill may or may not be scheduled, but there may still be the desire for the fiscal note.
I think that's very important and very valid. Appreciate that very much. Anybody else under the area of timeliness just want to weigh in? And I would say yes, Representative Vogel. Sometimes you go through these and you think a little bit more, read through them, but we are at a really busy time right now. It's hard to almost kind of corral all those things together. But members, do you think if we ask Ms. Weber to flesh these out a little bit more, so maybe we have a little bit more down to work from, would be helpful?
Yeah.
Okay. I think so. I think that'll help. Sometimes it's... Yes, Representative.
Well, go ahead and finish your thought.
No, I was done. That's good.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I just wanted to call out or discuss a little bit number 11, technical issues with the bills. Obviously, it should be the author's responsibility to be as clear and succinct with the legislation. I was talking with one of my Democratic colleagues in the House just today. He was saying that he never introduces a bill until he's reworked it at least 8 to 10 times, you know, rough drafts, that he goes through it in a fine-tooth comb to make sure it's right before he actually turns it in. And we were having discussions about that. But coincidentally, today, I received a fiscal note that is probably the most detailed fiscal note I've received in the last 7 years here. And it was riddled full of, it is assumed, it is assumed, it is assumed, it is assumed. And I read all of the assumptions and I agreed as the author of that bill with the assumptions in it. But sometimes maybe before a fiscal note goes along, if it's a complicated bill, as part of that process, maybe a conversation with the author sometimes might prevent going down the wrong track. And that doesn't mean that the author is technically correct in how the bill is written as to what the intent was, but that certainly could create some problems. And coincidentally, as you mentioned earlier, not all fiscal notes are the same, or the energy or effort, and it was clear to me with regard to the one I saw today that that took some energy and effort to put that together. When we heard your budget presentation in State Gov Finance, and being a numbers nerd that I am, I quickly determined that it was approximately $350 every time somebody requested a fiscal note. And this one that I read was probably a $1,500 fiscal note with regard to the detail that went into it. So I appreciate the challenges you have, and some of them come out on a half a sheet and are rather simple, and it's not a complicated bill. And other ones have all sorts of interactions with different parts of our government and requires a qualified opinion on different agencies and different departments. So With that, I think you have a challenging job, and that might be just one thing that maybe gets worked into number 11 before you get too deep into it if it's a complicated bill or has a lot of interactions with other agencies. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Hertas. I would say even in some of the sequencing and ordering of things, you know, laying them out in such a way that kind of follows the process of the fiscal note thing. But I think we got to start from somewhere, and I know for us as legislators, Representative Senator Rosen.
Yeah.
I know. Every time you have a mixed committee with House and Senate, you know so well, right?
Well, it just got me thinking, Madam Chair, and members, that it would be interesting to see a chart how many fiscal notes have increased over the biennium after so many 20 years. It would be interesting. And I think if some of these agenda items were addressed, I know, and I'm not saying anything out of context, but we've talked about it in our own context, own caucus, of having a limit on fiscal notes because we have so many requests, or more so bills, actually. But if you had some parameters on when a fiscal note could be requested, that there was a purpose of the fiscal note, and is it binding, and just a few little guidelines, perhaps we wouldn't have as many. We'd be a little more thoughtful about what we request.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. You know, one of the things that I've found through this whole legislative budget office process, we've had conversations about fiscal notes and process that we generally have not had before. And I think it has made us a more aware legislature about the work of it, the importance of it. We've always recognized, but the work of it and that kind of understanding, and I think communicating that back to our respective bodies, I think will be very helpful at recognizing, you know, what it is that we are accomplishing. But in having the first year fiscal note process starting September 1st this year, they have a lower bar, you might say, to get their feet wet on this whole thing next year, and we'll have a much better sense of that. But my concern is more making sure that we have the time for the training. But I would say that's been one of the benefits right now, is that we've all become so much more aware. And Representative Hertas, your first year on this, so it's, if you like nerdy things, this is really where, and it is the devil's in the details. And so many times, as you, Representative Carlson and Senator Cohen and Senator Rosen as well, in that kind of work. Members, do you want to pick another one or have more input?
Madam Chair, I was just going to add, Senator Rosen asked the question about the volume, and somebody commented to me just yesterday on the floor that the trajectory we're on, we're going to be about 1,000 bills more this biennium than we were the last biennium, which was a record. So it doesn't look like the work's getting any lighter. But what I did notice a little bit differently so far, at least in the House in this session, is it appears, and maybe I'm not wrong or not correct, but it appears that, and maybe attributable to so many new members in the House, that we've spent an inordinate amount of time on overviews and agency issues and whatnot, and it seems like we've gotten pretty far into the session where we're really getting down to the nitty-gritty of hearing bills, and then the committee deadlines are right upon us. So maybe in terms of working with an office like yours, if the legislature were so inclined to be able to hear agency bills and overviews, as well as introduce some bills early or hear some bills earlier in the session, would not cause such a pile on for the work that you have to do, which obviously is means you probably don't go home some nights, and that's a difficult task to be put in.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you, Ms. Weber or Madam Chair, could you go through the timeline again on the LBO, when this has to be up and running? Or did you go through that?
Sure.
I
don't know. Madam Chair and
Senator Ms. Weber,
Rose,
go ahead.
The Legislative Budget Office assumes responsibility for oversight of fiscal notes on September 1st of this year. One of the requirements in the statute is that uniform standards and procedures are approved by the Oversight Commission and published by September 1st on the LBO website and in the State Register.
So my plan had been to bring back more detail to the Oversight Commission in June to allow the Oversight Commission to provide, have discussion, provide additional input and guidance on what you'd like to see in the standards, and then bring the final version back to you in August was the timeline that I was working on.
So members, one of my questions is, Ms. Weber is talking about that in June, and so this is kind of going into the next item, I think, on our agenda, which was meetings, topics, discussion. I would suppose that a pretty big topic is going to be this project right here, right now. That's going to be a great task to do in and of itself. But future meetings, in order to get these things done, we're going to have to, you know, do meetings. And I'm all for every week for 4 weeks, but you have to have staff have time to do things in between, so sometimes that's not always practical. On the other hand, we have July 4th and we have August, we have other things like that. And so can I get some input from the members of the commission as to your thoughts in regards to even something in May, just to get that next draft in front of us, and or should we wait till June?
I would, thank you, Madam Chair. My opinion would be I would support getting into this as soon as possible, and to have additional meetings if time permits to have the next step to have this body look at the issues and react to.
Anybody else want to comment on timing of the next meeting? Maybe we just start for the next meeting. Senator Wicklund?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I was kind of wondering if I could ask, you know, how are you going to gather feedback from some of the other stakeholders? It seemed you mentioned that was part of the process, and I'm wondering, May is a time when they're going to be really busy, and I'm just wondering, do you have a structured process for getting the feedback so that you can incorporate it into something that you can bring to us? Or I think
Chair and Senator Wicklund, I admittedly haven't had a chance to talk with Mr. Nauman, Mr. Marks, and Mr. Eitan about what the best approach is. I wanted to be conscientious about the demands that are on all of them during the legislative session, but I would like to host some open meetings and host them at a time. One idea that I had was maybe over the legislative break. I don't know how people would react to that, but if that would be
Ms. Weber,
where committee demands and so forth wouldn't be such that fiscal analysts, agency CFOs, agency fiscal note coordinators, those are the people I really want to get feedback and input from. Those are the people who depend on and are intimately involved in the fiscal note process. So I don't know if that's feasible or not. That was why I proposed the June timeframe to come back to all of you to allow some flexibility in recognition of the demands on all of those people during the session.
Senator Wicklund, did you have another comment?
Well, I guess that would be just, my next question would just be how do we plan to structure it? Are we going to meet again before she has an opportunity to get more feedback and flesh things out more? Or is it for us to meet again and then meet after that? Or, I mean, what would be the goal of the next step, I guess?
Well, Senator Wicklund, I think the goal is to have that done by well in time for September 1st, not pushing it. But I would expect that we would have a process like we did today. We have this laid out. We gave input. Now Ms. Weber goes back, goes further, lays things out a little bit more. And I think it's good for us to give her some feedback on that level before she gets too far down the road and we say, well, that's not quite what we were thinking of. I don't want her to do a whole bunch of work. My thought is then we give some feedback, then we get more detail, more feedback, and then it starts. That's a fairly common type of process that I would think of. Mm-hmm. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I wasn't sure what Ms. Weber meant by legislative break.
Legislative what?
In April.
She said legislative break.
Break.
Were you talking about the spring break?
Madam
Ms.
Chair,
Weber.
Representative Carlson, yes.
It's also my understanding that there may be some downtime. As we were talking about the staff training plan for the LBO analysts, we acknowledge that there may be some time where fiscal analysts, executive budget officers, aren't having the demands of committee hearings that where they could be more available. And so that might be a time where people could provide some. But I'll defer. I'm looking at my colleagues to see if that's even a viable option.
Well, Mr. Weber, I would
Senator Representative Carlson. By legislative break. She meant interim or she meant the spring break.
Well, there's April. I think the official quote break that we have, spring break, is April 12th, I think, to the 22nd. That's the dates. Okay.
So, Madam Chair, I think I'd like the opportunity to think about this a little bit and maybe talk to fiscal staff about it before I react too quickly. In theory, it's a great time. I think as a practical matter, just thinking about how the deadlines for the legislative calendar are set forth, I think it's very reasonable to assume that at least some fiscal staff will be heavily involved. Well, maybe legislators are not here. We might be quite busy pulling things together and doing additional work in preparation for floor discussions.
I think, Mr. Nauman, that's a really good point. So it may, Ms. Weber, it may sound like a break, but I would have to say it depends. You know, if you pick out a day and say who might be available this day, I think you initiate it. I would suggest you initiate it, talk with Mr. Marks, Mr. Nauman, if the three of you come up with a day, then and Ms. Rattan, and so on and so forth. I think Mr. Nobles as well, that a lot of this can be engaged with our staff to do a lot of that prep work that we don't necessarily have to, but if they're available during that time, that may be a possibility. But I know that many legislators during that time, they're most often not available.
Madam Chair, I'll just offer this as well. Ms. Weber has a high burden here because she has a reason to expect and, in a sense, demand a lot of support from fiscal staff and MMB as she's pulling this together. This is a big job for her. The reality, however, is that all of us are currently occupied in a lot of ways with the current endeavor that we're all embarked on called the 2019 session. And that does crunch a lot of things on the back end for her. Since we're all essentially chatting here, I'll tell you that we had House and Senate fiscal staff that participated in some of the interviews for the LBO. And as interviews are wont to do, they take longer than you expect. And there were a couple of occasions where Ms. Weber had to call back and say, sorry, I had a candidate that didn't accept, and now we've got to reopen the interview process. And I was sort of agonizing with myself. Do I go back to the same fiscal analyst who had participated in the interviews, recognizing that she had participated before? She had the experience, but I didn't know what her calendar looked like. Thankfully, it worked, but we're in the middle of session. We're asking a lot of fiscal staff. So we're going to be back-ending a lot of this, in my view, and that's we're going to be hard-pressed to not do that.
Thank you, Mr. Nauman. That's why it's important for us to have this open and frank discussion about this, first of all. So I would gather from this kind of input that we'd probably be better off letting staff just navigate. That's going to be enough of a project, and to aim towards June then, early June maybe. After Memorial Day for sure, and then expect, though, to put in a little bit more heavy lifting to do as much as we can, and it somewhat depends. But I would say also, Ms. Weber, that if you're in a situation that you'd like to try if we can do an LBO meeting for a very specific purpose and that would be helpful, you're at a point in saying, I think you should feel free to do so, staff as well. We'll let you lead a little bit on that. Depending upon where you're at would be my thought. But otherwise, in general, to aim for June after the holiday and then it's going to take some concerted effort for us to do that. And by the way, even once we get going, having September 1st does not mean like now we're done or we can't review it, or once it's in practice, we take a look at it and say we need to reassess. It doesn't have to be something that we can't consider that.
How do we know we're not going to be in session?
Senator Cohen?
In June.
Senator Cohen, I'm not planning on it.
Okay.
Are you planning on it, Senator Cohen?
Never know.
Oh, okay. We'll certainly hope that is not the case. Any other input, Senator Cohen?
I guess it wasn't very
Any
helpful.
Joyful bits of news you'd like to?
I guess I wasn't very helpful on that. So.
You're just a good pragmatist, Senator Cohen. I can see, as an attorney, Senator Cohen, you definitely think of those things that sometimes your clients aren't thinking of. And I appreciate that thought.
I was going to say, I know that things start on September 1st, but we had a little flexible time in that period of time when we start talking about training and so on. We will not be in session, and there's not an election, so there probably would be a little flexibility as we move into the fall as well. Okay. Even though the transition by law takes place, we don't necessarily have to have all the T's and dots.
I would say, Representative Carlson, we need something enough that we fulfill the statutory requirement. But I don't think that statutory requirement says it has to be perfect. It says we should
point.
Have at least
That's
a good...
That's my point, Madam yeah. Chair. And, you know, in references, for example, for training and that kind of thing, I think that some of that, if necessary, could go beyond September 1st, simply because of summer schedules and all of that.
Right, and when we get into
I'm retired, so I'm fairly flexible, but not everybody is.
Thank you very much.
Retired from my regular job.
Yeah, I don't think you're too retired, as I've noticed anyway. And welcome, Representative Noor. Glad to have you here today.
Thank you.
And members, without any further business on the agenda, a motion to adjourn would be in order.
So moved.
So moved by Senator Rosen. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you.